This week, most markets took a pause ahead of next week's FOMC rate decision meeting. Welcome, everyone. Your host, Chris Waltzek, back with you. We've got another big show lined up this weekend with interviews from top industry pros as well as the financial market headlines affecting your portfolios. One plus hour of must-hear edutainment is headed your way with James Turk from Gold Money. He thinks the global currency bubble ensures that gold will climb the proverbial wall of worry for most of this year. Although U.S. equities continue to attract momentum capital, eventually that bubble will pop, directing sizable funds into the precious metals sector. And the standoff in Ukraine represents a new economic cold war, further eroding dollar hegemony. Precious metals remain the core of every healthy investment portfolio, an essential life raft for investors. Then Christopher Duane from Don't Tread on Me says that the precious metals asset class remains the core of every sound and healthy investment portfolio. Inflation will make savings account yields far less attractive, and investors are encouraged to ignore, though, all the volatility in the market and dollar cost average into gold and silver. Plus, we should expect a U.S. dollar default. The demise of the entire economic system is inevitable. The powers that be know this is going to happen. Their fingerprints are all over the bail-in legislation added to almost every nation. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with the market weather report. Cloudy skies appeared over the gold market this week. Traders' attention turned to extreme dollar strength, a two-month massive rally in the greenback in anticipation of an impending rate hike and lessening tensions in certain geopolitical hotspots. At Friday's closing bell on the New York COMEX exchange, gold was off nearly $40, finishing at $12.31, about 3%. Silver gave back a little over 50 cents, finishing at $18.45 an ounce. The XEU Gold and Silver Equities Index dropped about 4%. Palladium gave back 54, ending at 836, recoiling from last week's 13-year high on a temporary ceasefire between Russia and Ukraine. Russia is the world's largest palladium producer, still accounting for about 40% of output. And platinum was off about 40, ending at 1370 an ounce, while West Texas Intermediate crude was down about a dollar for the week, finishing at 92.27. The top story moving the sector this week was strength in the U.S. dollar and in the equities markets. Global funds continue to chase U.S. shares as a safe haven away from geopolitical uncertainty. Nevertheless, the next Fed policy meeting is slated for next week, September 16th and 17th. Investors continue to watch the FOMC and Fed governors for any signs of higher rates. Anticipation of higher rates helped push the greenback to the highest point since last summer. Still, bargain hunters are snapping up the precious metals at discounted prices, particularly China and India, which together comprise nearly three-fourths of total gold demand. China is expected to import about 1,000 metric tons of gold, while demand for gold in India is robust, increasing amid relaxed import duties. The current festival period is also a solid time for purchases, where gifts of gold jewelry and related items are common. The favorable period extends throughout most of October into the Festival of Lights. Meanwhile, U.S. retail sales data matched expectations, indicating robust economic conditions. Sales rose in August, a little more than 0.5%. That was the biggest increase, though, since April. The number was revised higher for June and July. The preliminary September reading of the University of Michigan Thomson Reuters Consumer Sentiment Index also inched up its best reading since the summer of last year. These strong numbers without any signs of excessive inflation it's just the perfect world, I think, for the Fed, which is leading some analysts and economists to increase expectations for rate hikes as soon as next week's FOMC meeting. Bottom line on the precious metals. Well, clearly the threat of higher rates has investors a bit nervous here. They're waiting on the sidelines. But once I think the Fed's poker hand is revealed, I expect the sell the rumor to revert to buy the fact. For the time being, investor apathy continues to provide buying opportunities for long-term focused investors. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, clouds appeared over the New York Stock Exchange on the heels of five consecutive winning weeks. Shares took a much-needed pause. Traders chose the sidelines ahead of next week's FOMC meeting to see if Fed governors might steal the punch bowl from the digital trading floor. For the week, the Dow was down about 150, about 1%, finishing below the 17,000 point for the first time in several weeks, ending at 16,987. The S&P 500 was off 22, wrapping up at 1985, below that 2000 mark, and the NASDAQ dropped 15 points, not much, ending at 4567, still within earshot of that year 2000, 5000 mark. Money managers will get a glimpse into the mind of the Fed Chair's interest rate intentions next week, following their two-day policy-setting committee meeting, scheduled to wrap up on Wednesday. Rates have been so low for so long, I think it's easy to forget what a positive impact these low lending costs have had on equities and the economy. The additional liquidity is arguably the underpinning for much of the share price climb over the last 5 or 6 years. If the Fed actually does pull the trigger on rates, which I deem somewhat unlikely at this time, the market dynamics would likely shift. Plus, they wouldn't enjoy the cushion against global tensions that lower rates provide. Bottom line on Wall Street. Well, this week's 7 index fear index remained near the neutral category, suggesting that the final bottom is not yet likely in place. For next week's stock picks and all of the reports and forecasts, you can log into your Alpha Stocks newsletter account. Coming up after the break, more GoldSeek.com radio with James Turk and Christopher Duane. We want for you to stay with us right here at GoldSeek. Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Christopher Duane makes his debut on GoldSeek.com radio. He's the founder of Sons of Liberty Academy and sees challenging times ahead, to say the least, for the financial markets and investors, which requires a sea change in investment strategy and tact. Welcome, Christopher.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm very excited for this conversation.
You know, we were having a interesting discussion before the interview, and you hate to lose that because we want the listeners to hear people's innermost thoughts. And we were comparing and contrasting, if you will, how important it is to catch these major themes and trends that oftentimes the mainline media, they just don't give you the heads up. And one of those themes was the housing crisis, where apparently you were a year ahead of my family. We sold near the peak in 2006. You say that you sold your house in New Jersey in 2005. Tell us more.
Sure. Yeah, it was July of 2005, and my wife was actually 7 months pregnant with our first child, and I took the very odd idea of that we're in the middle of a housing bubble and that things were going to not end well and that I should cash out while I was still ahead. Basically, I woke up in May of 2005. I realized that the Federal Reserve was a privately owned company that created all this wealth, that the government was manipulating interest rates down, that the consumers were buying stuff that they couldn't afford, that the documentation process that was involved in this housing bubble was allowing people who couldn't even buy cars 2 years ago now buy $500,000 houses in my area. And I said, that's enough for me. We actually sold everything, and I put all the proceeds into gold and silver back in 2005. So I did two very odd things by not going against the trend in the housing bubble and then buying the stuff called gold and silver, which I had no clue about, you know, months prior. But I knew that that was the place to be for the next decade.
But, you know, you also talked about, or we talked about, how you had to go against not only the mainline thinking, but also against the general prevailing thought within your circle of friends and family. And I think that for most people, that contrarian perspective against peer pressure is one of the tougher things to wrap their minds around. Thinking outside the box can be challenging. Tell folks how you were able to make that leap of faith.
The only way you can do it is by using logic. You can't listen to everybody. Studies have shown that people will intentionally choose the wrong answer simply to conform with the collective. Any amount of psychological tests will prove that. Well, if that's the guiding force of most people's thinking, being the rational individual, you have to think outside the box. And, you know, that's where I think logic comes in. And it allowed me to basically look at this world and look at the facts. Don't look at the emotion of what's going on. And then predict what's the most likely outcome of this. Can this go on forever? Most trends usually don't. They usually end horribly. And the best thing to do is basically, you know, keep questioning the reality that's out there, and you'll be far off better. Like I told you in the pre-interview, you're not going to be able to day trade by this by any means, but you can certainly be on the right side of history when it matters the most.
It's so easy to look back, isn't it, in the rearview mirror and say, oh, well, it was obviously a housing peak. Most people missed it, though. What really grabbed my attention, and I held on to it, even wrote about it in Wealth Building Strategies 2006, 7, and 8, was the reset of the subprime and related adjustable rate mortgages and all the different classes in there. I held on that, and my thinking was, you know, until we can get this glut of inventory, this shadow inventory, washed out of the system, I just couldn't fathom how we could see a bottom before around 2011, 2012. Well, that just came to pass. Let's move on. You talk about traditional investing methodologies. You expect them to backfire. A different mindset is required to be rewarded by big profits. Give us an idea of what you see on a forward-looking basis.
Look at the S&P 500. I mean, if you look at the peaks in 2000 and 2008, those were obviously bubbles back then, and now we're leap years beyond that. I mean, since 2013, this market's been literally on a 45-degree angle straight up, without even pullbacks of even more than, you know, 4 or 5%. And each pullback that they have is smaller and smaller. They used to have a, you know, 10% pullback, 7% pullback, 5% pullback, and then move up. Now it's getting, you know, hyperbolic the way that it's going. So conventional wisdom would tell you right now, oh, the stock market's doing well. I tell you what, I don't hear anybody talking about the stock market like they did in 2000. I just think that it's a terrible place to be. That's not to say that I would short that market, simply because the underlying bubble that's driving all of this is the dollar, and that's what I'm most concerned about, and that's the biggest reason why I invest in gold and silver, is because that the underlying currency that's denominating the bond bubble, the real estate bubble, the stock market bubble, the American bubble, is horribly being undermined right now, and I don't think it's going to survive. So that's the main reason why I buy this gold and silver, is because it's insurance against real tangible wealth in your hands against all this intangible claims on future wealth, which is what the dollar is.
I liken the erosion of a currency to think of the Golden Gate Bridge, or maybe just the Interstate Bridge in your community. You know, they build these giant edifices based on steel structures surrounded by concrete. If any water really seeps in there and erodes the rebar, the steel underlying the mechanism, you can have a failure in a moment's notice, and the whole thing, the whole edifice, comes crumbling down. Well, that's, I think, an apt analogy. A million people a year cross the bridge in your community, and they think nothing of it. They're doing 55, 65 miles an hour. Everything's fine. And then suddenly, just the corrosion of that steel entered and the whole thing comes tumbling down. Could we see something sudden like that with our currency? And what would it mean for investors?
I don't see how we can possibly avoid it. I mean, show me one, you know, fiat currency that's lasted as long as the dollar, and I'll show you 5,000 of them that have collapsed, you know, horribly. And people that have been involved in having their wealth denominated in it have always come out the worst part of it. So people don't forget, or people do forget, that in 2008 we were within hours of the entire world economy collapsing. I have Representative Ken Jankowski out of Pennsylvania giving C-SPAN testimony, talking about how you know, there was an electronic run on the bank, and that $5.5 trillion was pulled out of the money market account within an hour. I mean, that's a third of the United States yearly GDP was pulled out of the money market funds because there was an electronic run on the bank. And they talked about if the government didn't step in, that would have been it. I mean, literally within hours on that day, and yet it passes. Nobody noticed that day, and even now, people still trust the system. I don't understand why people would even have a dollar inside the banking system knowing how fragile it is.
I'd like to just delve into why this is so significant. We're bombarded, aren't we, with information from every source, whether it be mainline media or the blogosphere, just an overwhelm of information. However, at the end of the day, when you take a look at the charts going over, you know, that period from 2000, let's say 8, we came within hours, not days, from the end. Look across the board, nearly anything related to bonds, anything related to stocks, with very few exceptions. And as you say, without the Federal Reserve and their colleagues stepping in with an unimaginable amount, the Fed may have extended as much as $17 trillion to Europe and around the world just to keep this house of cards from imploding. So tell us more.
My thinking is that people that, you know, didn't learn the lesson in 2008 are going to lose everything this next crisis. Yeah, they were fed up with the wars, but you know what? Hope and Change Obama was coming. He was going to solve everything. So that happened right as the people still had faith in Greenspan and Bernanke and this almighty wisdom of what happened. They even had faith in Wall Street. And now I think that since this crisis and the systemic damage it has done, you know, you can look at the labor participation rates and you can look at all the bailouts and you can look at the lack of jail time of any of these Wall Street guys that, you know, pilfered billions of dollars from the taxpayers. No punishment handed down. You can't tell me that the psychology now, today, with people who have lost their jobs, people who have lost their savings, people who have lost their faith in the politicians and the banking system are going to roll over again the next time that this happens. And it's going to be magnitudes worse because the problem was not solved in 2008. It was kicked down the road. And you mentioned before $17 trillion by the Federal Reserve. That's just what they admit to. We have no clue of what has been going on behind the scenes. What's most important is that since 2008, you look at what China has been doing, Russia has been doing, Iran has been doing. They've been slowly eking away, getting away from the dollar. And you're going to wake up one day and find out that all these nations that have held this world's reserve currency, the next crisis, are going to dump it on the markets. And the value of those dollars are only determined by how many of them are floating around out there. And right now they're sitting around. But I'm telling you, the next crisis that's going to happen, you watch that dollar price go down, and they're going to throw it at anything that they can, oil, gold, silver, copper, food, corporations, they're going to throw it at that because those at least have some value. These dollars are just future claims on wealth. People need to know that. Your bank deposits, you're a lender to the bank. You have no security in that. So I recommend people stop, you know, holding their wealth in intangible things and hold real wealth, which is what gold and silver represents.
The tragedy here, if you will, for lack of a better word, is that we had the opportunity, didn't we, to clear the system? We had the opportunity 2008 and 2009, instead of bailing out the banks with trillions of dollars, we had the opportunity to let the banks fail, to go into foreclosure, to press the reset button. You can take a look at what Sweden did in a similar situation on a miniature scale. They let the banks fail, and then they combined all of the bad debt in one sort of centralized location and managed that. They emerged from this a remarkably powerful economy. Their neighbors to the south, and both of them emerged from the problem by recognizing, look, we've learned our lesson. We don't want your toxic debt. We don't want to import your disease. All right. We don't want to fall into this debt trap, and they've avoided it ever since. So there's a lot, I think, to be learned from there. Any comments?
Yeah, I mean, think about human nature. I mean, we're a country that's absolutely drunk on power, drunk on we create debt out of nowhere. That's all we do. We don't produce anything anymore. We have more people that are that are unemployed, that you know, out of the labor participation of the economy, and we're a nation that has gotten something for nothing for a couple generations. And when this ends, the drunk only changes when he hits rock bottom. And I don't expect people to wake up. I don't expect any grand reform. There's no political savior that's going to come in and save this system. The only thing that's going to happen and the only thing that's going to change is that we have to have a collapse. People think that, these great depressions and economic crises are something to be avoided. No, I think the greatest personal things in my life have been the biggest setbacks. Well, that's going to be the same thing for us. We need to have this collapse to reset our values, to bring back productive forces into our economy as opposed to just these Ponzi scheme distractions that we have. We need this, and it's coming. And all I can tell individuals to do is you have to individually prepare for this collective fate that's coming.
Let's take a look at the bail-ins. I think this is an excellent segue into another topic I'd like for us to discuss today. And it all ties in with the noose that's being dropped around all of our necks collectively. Take a look at bail-ins. I mean, we've seen what happened in Europe. Now we're seeing legislation written in Canada and the United States, all over North America. The powers that be are aware that the system is imploding. It may be a slow-motion train wreck, but it is inevitable, okay? And if you see this coming and you're aware of it, you can start to take some measures. Why should people be nervous about their money market funds? Is it really safe as money in the bank?
No, it isn't. I mean, you're a unsecured creditor. You look up any legal definition of somebody that deposits money at a bank, you are an unsecured creditor. That's the lowest form that you could possibly be. And if you give your money to the bank, you're literally giving it to them. You know, they're supposed to give it back, but you're an unsecured creditor during the most difficult of times. So, you know, I don't have any stock money in the account. Everything that I other than a month's worth of, you know, cash to keep the house moving along, everything else is out of it and put it into the gold and silver. And that's the way that it should be, because that's real tangible wealth. You know, that's something you can hold. You know, if you went through any time in history and you told humans, 200, 300,000 years ago that, oh, look, I have a little screen that says I have $1 million and I can go buy this super fast Ferrari. That's the overriding theme of what's going on. And I can assure you that when this collapse happens, our grandchildren will look back at us and think about how that we actually trusted the worst in humanity on Wall Street and Washington with all this money, and that we thought that these computer screens actually meant something. No, we're going to get back to biblical wealth. We're going to get back to gold and silver and what land and productive and factories and things that actually provide real value to humanity, not these scams and schemes that are producing millionaires left and right and billionaires all over the place. You know, look at the people that are making the most amount of money right now, and they provide the least amount of value. The rock stars, the lawyers, the lobbyists, the military contractors, they don't provide any real value to humanity. And yet the people that do, the electricians and the teachers and the farmers, they're barely eking by. When the dollar collapses, you'll see a reversion where those that actually produce real wealth come out of this far better off and actually take the burden that has been placed on us.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I talked to G. Edward Griffin last week and several other guests recently. You know, why is it that people can't recognize how corrupt the system is? They fall into it and it almost becomes second nature. And I think when you're born into a system, it's almost like the Matrix. You know, I hate to use the overused, the tired analogy of, you know, Morpheus and Neo and the rest, but I mean, you're really born into the Matrix, and we have been here. I think you'd agree ever since at least Nixon shut the gold window, but really it was long before then. It was when the creature from Jekyll Island was unloosed in 1913. Things just slowly erode, and if you're a student of history, you begin to realize it unfolds in a very similar path. No, it's not a perfect facsimile, but it's cyclical, and you can see how morals erode in almost every instance where fiat money really took hold. And I think you'd agree there's never been a time in history where fiat money was more pervasive. We simply don't have thanks to Gresham's Law, I guess, a currency that is ubiquitously backed by precious metals anymore. It's just been pushed out of the system. In keeping precious metals on our minds here, let's move on to another topic that I know is near and dear to you and our listeners want to hear about, and that, of course, the London silver price fix. After 117 years, this has apparently come to a close. They have rejected it. Four or five of the top banks there used to agree each day on the silver price. And I wonder if you could tell people why you think this is a significant moment for the precious metals markets.
I think the only thing that matters before and after the London silver fix is the fact that Deutsche Bank was forced out by BaFin. BaFin is the German equivalent of like the SEC. And BaFin said that the manipulation in commodities and specifically precious metals was worse than the $800 trillion LIBOR scandal. And they forced Deutsche Bank to end that relationship with the London silver fix. So Deutsche Bank wanted immediately out of it, and the Bank of England somehow convinced them to stay on for 3 months to act as a buffer period so that they could establish a new one. So what they ended up doing is they ended up establishing a new one with, I think, replacing Deutsche Bank with Mitsui. And now it's an electronic system, supposedly more transparent. But it doesn't matter. I mean, it's a computerized paper scheme, and they could dump billions of dollars onto the paper market. No one's taking delivery from there. So I think at the end of the day, the manipulation is going to continue until it ends, and it's going to end horribly. There has to be a physical break in the market. There has to be physical shortages that, override this paper market, and that anybody trading long or short in paper in these markets, are adding to the problems. They need to just simply buy physical silver, which is my preference over gold. And just wait for the day that it matters most. And to think that you're going to be able to get plus or minus 10% above the market and risk your whole amount of capital inside of that, I'm more concerned about the return of capital than the return on capital.
Will Rogers, if I'm not mistaken. And also Warren Buffett also echoed his sentiments. All right, you also investigate why most oversold markets make the largest returns. Silver, I think, certainly qualifies here. I mean, from a contrarian perspective, we've had quite a sell-off. I'd like to give you a chance here to outline what will be the impetus taking AG back to 50 and higher.
Well, I think ultimately the dollar crisis is what's going to propel it to these astronomical numbers, and I really refuse to put any dollar figure on it because I think that the time that I've invested for silver is for the day that the dollar doesn't buy an ounce of silver anywhere. That it's just a failed currency and that it could be denominated in, billions or trillions like we've seen in Zimbabwe or Weimar Germany. Think about it. I mean, in 2005, when I first started investing in silver, nobody talked about it. I mean, it was such a small piece. Like, I remember David Morgan and maybe one or two other guys out there really talking about it, but you couldn't find out much about it. And now that the whole blogosphere, I mean, there's tons of blogs and radio shows and all devoted to it now. So I think the awareness has reached a certain level now where people are out there. But look at the demand that has been driven on silver in coin sales since 2005, in solar power since 2005. The industrial demand has gone up significantly, and the biggest reason why I'm investing in it is because this is a precious and depleting resource that's absolutely vital to a modern way of life. And the United States Geological Survey, I think back in 2007, predicted that between 2020 and 2030, there would physically be no more silver on Earth. If we keep consuming the amount of silver that we have on a level, and we do consume it, like it's physically destroyed as in most of these processes, there will be no silver left anymore. And when I wrote the author of that study back, I think in 2010, I said, can you clarify that? And he said, well, unless there's a price change that allows more production to come online or wiser use of that silver, that's what's going to end up happening because there's only a finite amount of this silver that's out there.
I'll give you an example. Today, I've been drinking from a Brita water filter. They take the carbon and they spray it with micro silver. And it's in everything. You'll never reclaim that silver again. You might be thinking, well, that's a minuscule amount. Yes, but there are millions of people using Brita water filters. Cell phones filled with tiny amounts of silver, your computer keyboard, it'll be tossed, very difficult to reclaim. The silver simply won't be reclaimed by anything much more than Mother Nature over millions of years, and it disappears for good. I'd also like to talk about an important aspect of silver, at least that economists like to look at, and that's its given good status. You know, I mean, people know that have studied the Econ 101 that given goods have upward sloping demand curves. People have a tendency to consume more of it despite the fact that the price is increasing. That's not a positive factor, but when it comes to silver, due to the absolutely inelastic demand that we have, we just must have it, period. There are very few substitutes that are reasonable. You can't use gold, for instance, to replace that silver in electronics, not because it won't work, but simply because it's just too costly. This kind of seems to be setting the stage for an interesting scenario for silver investors. Please tell us more.
Yeah, I mean, you look at what's going on in India. They're going to build the world's largest solar farm. I think it's going to be miles big. I mean, it's a huge endeavor that's going to have. And that alone is going to take up 10 million ounces a year. I think the United States Mint only, produces 40 million ounces of silver eagles a year. Right off the bat, that's more demand that's coming online. And we're having declining, finding of this stuff. And silver is also an interesting thing that it's relatively shallowly mined. It's not like gold where you can dig miles and miles down. And when it's shallow mined, that means it's depleted even faster. And you think about, 200 years ago, the gold to silver ratio was, 15 to 1. For every ounce of gold you found 15 ounces of silver. And now it's 1 to 9. For 1 ounce of gold, there's 9 ounces of silver. I mean, that's a significant drop just in the natural amount that's come out of the ground. And yet, where's gold and silver trading on the dollar market? I mean, we're like 1 to 65. 1 ounce of gold equals, 65, 67 ounces of silver. I mean, that's a huge wealth discrepancy in the pricing mechanism of that. I mean, reality is that it has to be at least closer to what is coming out of the ground, and I think it's even worse than that because all the gold that's ever been mined has been saved and treasured. And we've destroyed and burned through billions of ounces of stockpile, where I think that there's physically less silver above ground than there is gold.
You're absolutely right. Silver had a tendency to pull near the surface, and so most of the big finds have been found. Most of the Comstock loads, if you will. It's a thing of the past. So now most of our silver is a byproduct of copper and, of course, gold, nickel, if you will, but mostly copper production. But another topic you brought up that I think is so important and central to the theme of silver's value, intrinsic value on a forward-looking basis, and that's solar production. I have a solar array with 10 panels. We produce a kilowatt per hour at peak. Every one of these panels has at least an ounce of silver. That's an ounce of silver that could never be reclaimed. It would not be cost effective with silver anything less than $100 to $200 an ounce. It's gone forever. And you touched on this. India, very much inclined to build these solar arrays, but so is China and Germany and all over Europe. And the United States is only now coming online because I think we were disappointed by Jimmy Carter's push around the 70s wasn't cost effective, but solar power has come a long way in 20, 30 years. You can get an amazing amount of output at a very low cost, pure sine wave inverters, which allow your sensitive electronics, your latest computers, laptops, and related technologies to run without a glitch. Battery storage, it's very inexpensive relative to where it was a few decades ago. So even I think the more modest middle class home is starting to look at it. But there's another wild card that I hope some of my listeners have picked up over the years, and that is grid-type inverters. Plug that power without a battery bank, without much of a solar array, with a very small investment, you can use a grid-tie inverter, not in all areas. You plug that right into the wall, and your meter will start to run backwards. And once again, an inexpensive technology, and please, by the way, for our listeners, don't run out and buy a grid-tie inverter until you've talked to your local power company. But for a lot of people, it is an option that's available. And once again, silver will be in big demand there for decades to come. Christopher Duane, it's been fun having you on the show. Why don't you tell folks more about the services you provide and how people can direct their web browsers to your sites?
My YouTube channel is called The Truth Never Told. It's on YouTube. We've got 72,000 subscribers and 15 million views. I have the Silver Shield Exchange and Silver Shield Collection. These are coins that I've designed myself. We have our own marketplace for them. They're very different. I've tried to create a privately minted coins because I find it ironic that so many people hate the dollar and what's going on in the world and then go rush out and go buy silver from the United States Treasury. So I think that we should be supporting privately minted solutions, and these are definitely unique coins that, you know, I think most people will like.
And by avoiding the cartel that is likely behind much of our oppression and the powers that be, there are alternative sources. Do you want to share any more specifics there?
This is my third year. I've probably designed 25 different coins, and I have probably another 20 that could come out in, you know, any time. But you know, they're unique pieces that I call them historically significant because they call out both the good and the bad of what's going on in this world. I mean, I've done coins that mock you know, debt and death empire, that we've spread all this war and we, you know, rally around all these flags. I've done coins that have talked about the trivium, which is grammar, logic, and rhetoric, on how to free the individual's mind from this collective oppression that's going on there. I did Freedom Girl. I've done so many designs out there, but they're all unique, where I think, you know, the wonderful thing about these silver coins is they're going to be around 200-400 years from now, just like the Roman coins were. And future generations are going to look at these designs and go, not everybody went along with what was the mainstream out there, that big dollar collapse that changed human history.
You might recall how it certainly appeared as though there was a collected effort against one of the fathers in this area, you know, the founding fathers, and that's, of course, Bernard von Nothaus, how his life was just systematically destroyed when he created that Liberty Dollar, I think he referred to it. Beware on the specifics that are minted, which I'm sure you've already taken caution.
I learned a great deal of lessons from Bernard's unfortunate case. I ran to his defense when he was called a domestic terrorist for that. We have a privately owned Federal Reserve that's funding all these wars, and they turn a blind eye to them, obviously, because it's in the power, and Bernard was obviously challenging the status quo. But yeah, none of my coins say dollar on them, have dollar symbols, values on them. They can never be mistaken for any legal currency, and they're all denominated in what the only thing that I measure my wealth in is ounces.
Christopher Duane, we're going to look forward to having you back on the show.
I appreciate it, and I had a great time.
Well, it's a pleasure to have James Turk back on the show, founder of GoldMoney.com, author of The Coming Collapse of the Dollar and How to Profit from It.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. It's good to be with you. And there is indeed a new book. It's called The Money Bubble, What to Do Before It Pops.
I'm sure it's a must read. And I wonder if we could start today with the summer doldrums in the precious metals. Typically, though, as the fall approaches, we have the Indian wedding season, as well as Christmas, Hanukkah, and related holidays. As fabricators and manufacturers stock up on the metals, it tends to be a more positive time, at least for a price, and give some support. Tell us what you see happening in the markets, please.
Yeah, let's look at it from a big picture point of view, because I think that's what's really important. The low in this correction that began 3 years ago was actually in June 2013, you know, over 14 months ago. And the gold price has been slowly climbing higher. In other words, the low was in June of 2013. We had a higher low in December of 2013. We had a higher low again in June of 2014. And now we're testing that June of 2014 low. And I expect that June of 2014 low will hold. You know, what I'm basically saying is that we're in a bull market, higher lows over a period of 14 months. And during a bull market, at the beginning, you're typically characterized with, as they say, climbing a wall of worry. And, you know, everybody's worried here. Are we going to take out the June 14 low or the December 2013 low? Well, we'll see how it plays itself out. But I think the important thing that everybody should be focusing on is that, you know, gold is exceptionally good value down here. And as you say, seasonally, we're going into the seasonally strong time of the year. So one has to expect that, yeah, we're probably going to hold here and move higher as we go toward the end of the year. You know, we're actually up for the year, even though we're down. You know, it seems like, you know, we've been coming down the last few months. We're actually up about 5% for the year. So we'll probably have it up here again in the gold price when we finally get around to December 31st.
All eyeballs seem to be on U.S. equities right now. You know, the investment du jour that has captured the attention and fascination of hedge fund managers and the momentum crowd. We also, I think, see a slight flight to safety, perceived quality, I think, from Europe, at least on the Ukraine-Russia tensions that we've seen there and the potential for a new Cold War. And maybe that's a good segue into geopolitical issues. There's quite a few on the table because you are right there in Europe, this Ukraine situation. I think it could be an important piece on the chessboard in coming years for the precious metals.
Yeah, it doesn't look like the Ukraine situation is going to be resolved anytime soon. You know, even though they have a ceasefire in place, it's a question how long that will hold. And then the other issue, of course, is the sanctions that are being pursued. You know, the ones the West are imposing on Russia and the ones that Russia are imposing on the West. In that kind of environment, everybody loses. You know, it's not a shooting war, but it's a war, a financial war. And in a war, regardless whether it's a financial war or a shooting war, you know, everybody loses. You know, what's happening now is that economic activity is declining because of the sanctions. And then there's also the uncertainty as to, you know, what Russia is going to do with regard to its natural gas exports, which Europe actually depends upon. So I think geopolitical issues are going to be around for a long time. There's also a minor geopolitical issue right here in the UK. You know, I'm speaking to you from London, and next week the Scots are going to vote on whether or not to declare independence from the United Kingdom. And I think that could have shockwaves. It's already had impact on the pound sterling, which has been very, very weak as the pro-independence movement has gained momentum and actually taken the lead in the polls. And there are other areas in Europe that could have an impact. For example, in Spain, whether if Scotland successfully breaks away from the United Kingdom and declares independence, what is the Catalonian region of Spain going to do? So, you know, basically people want control of their own destiny. And I think we're seeing that. It's been a trend in place for many, many years. And I think it's going to continue to be a major geopolitical force.
You know, it's interesting because I have family in London that were here recently visiting. Our U.S. dollar caught in a multi-year trading range within an even longer-term downtrend. And I wonder if you might bring together this concept of the reserve currency, its loss of hegemony, and how this could impact our purchasing power and on the geopolitical stage in the coming decade.
First of all, you know, the dollar has bounced. I wouldn't say the dollar is strong. It's more a question of the dollar being the strongest in among a number of weak different currencies. You know, the dollar is bound simply because sterling has been weak and the euro has been weak because of issues relating to, you know, what's going to happen if Scotland becomes independent, what's going to happen in Europe because of the Ukraine and the bad European economy. But, you know, I think what history shows is that only strong currencies become reserve currencies. And, you know, when the sterling, British pound sterling, lost its status as a reserve currency, there was another currency waiting in the wings, which, of course, was the U.S. dollar, which, as they used to say back in the 1960s and before, was as good as gold. You know, that's no longer true because, you know, the dollar has been a very weak currency over the past several decades. But there is no obvious currency waiting in the wings to replace the U.S. dollar. So, you know, there could be a lot of turmoil in the international monetary system over the next several years for that reason, as well as for the reason that central banks are continuing to follow these misguided policies, you know, thinking that they can solve all of the world's economic problems by printing money. And we know from monetary history that, in fact, is not the case.
The fundamentals are just overwhelmingly strong, I think you'd agree, for the prospects of the metals, given all the issues you've touched on today. But the longer-term view, I think, is, at least technically speaking, is somewhat problematic. Maybe not the XAU so much, which appears to have washed out.
Yeah, I don't really think there's a new downtrend. I still see what's been happening over the last 3 years of a correction of the previous 10 years, or 12 years, you know, when gold went up 12 years in a row. So I just see this as a correction, and this year's probably, like I say, going to be an up year. You got to take the long-term, big picture view of gold and of silver, and you have to ask yourself, you know, where are you going to save money today? It doesn't make sense to save a national currency, because you don't get anything, any interest income on your bank account. And inflation is higher than the interest rate you receive on your currency. So you're effectively losing purchasing power. So my strategy has been for many, many years, and I continue to recommend this, is that the money that you save every month, that should just go into physical gold or physical silver and just play the long-term trend. The long-term trend has been up for the metals for, you know, 14 years to below in 1999. And every reason suggests, based on what's happening with central banks and government policies, that that's going to continue to be in place. So I've got to remain bullish on the precious metals, and I think precious metals are an important part of everyone's portfolio.
We've seen a flood of interest into equities, new highs, it seems, every week. The S&P 500, the Dow Jones Industrials, highest points, at least in the Dow, in over a century. The NASDAQ appears to be en route to its year 2005,000 peak, only a few hundred points away from that level. Is this a knee-jerk reaction following a 10-plus year consolidation in equities? And if so, do you see big equity flows and capital flows away from that market into the commodities and particularly precious metals?
You know, there is a bubble being blown out there, and it's called the money bubble. You know, it's the belief that national currencies are going to maintain purchasing power when, in fact, they're losing purchasing power all of the time. It's the misguided belief that government debt is supposedly a safe haven and the currencies that's denominated in are safe. But in reality, they're not. So, you know, that's where the bubble is. And then the equities, I think, are responding to that bubble. You know, the Federal Reserve has printed trillions of dollars of new currency through expansion of its balance sheet. And that money has to go somewhere. And where it's going is into the equity market. The equity market isn't rising because of good economic conditions. That won't happen until we have more people working in the country than there were at the peak of 2007. You know, we still have less people working than the peak of 2007, and adjusted for purchasing power and inflation, average family or average household real income is less than it was, you know, 7 years ago. So in those kind of environments, you're not going to have a good economy, regardless what the government says. The stock market's going up simply because of Federal Reserve money printing. And if the Federal Reserve stops printing, and that's what they're basically been doing. They've been cutting down on the amount of quantitative easing they've been doing, and they say they're going to end quantitative easing in the fall. You know, that I think is going to create problems for the stock market, similar to what it did in 2011 when the Fed stopped printing for a period of time. And that was a very bullish environment for gold. So, you know, going toward the end of the year, I think everything's lined up for higher gold and silver prices.
I wonder if you'd like to share any contact information and what's going on at goldmoney.com, please.
Yeah, you can find us at goldmoney.com. Not only the work that I do, but also my colleague, Alistair McLeod, who's the research director at Gold Money. Thank you, Chris.
It's time to get caught up with listeners' questions. So, opening up the phone line.
Hello, Chris Walczak. My name is Jimmy, and I'm calling to make a comment about today's, the latest Gold Seek radio show that had Louis Navalier and Bob Hoy on it, of course, with Robert Ian at the end. Anyway, I wanted to say that at about the 27-minute and 56-second mark on today's show, Louis Navalier, and I've listened to him before. I mean, of course, you've had him on before, and I've heard him before. At 27 minutes and 56 seconds, he says how Social Security and some of these other things appear to be pyramid schemes, so we need to get more people paying in. After hearing that, and from hearing him before as well, you know, I'm not going to listen to any of the rubbish that guy has to say at all. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Well, hello, Jimmy. I can understand your frustration, you know, with some comments. However, sometimes we put our foot in our mouths, don't we? Because none of us are perfect. So I guess we're all due some leeway with the occasional slip up. And it's a good thing, too, because, you know, I step in it from time to time, and I'm grateful when folks chuckle and forget all about it and we move forward. He's been a big friend of the show for nearly a decade, and he's the only advisor that I would point to who's been consistently right on the equities markets. His services and stock picks are simply the best. You know, I recommend him along with my Alpha Stocks newsletter and the stock candidates. So let's appreciate, you know, our guests' gifts and maybe overlook the occasional blemish. We appreciate your comments, though, and we'd like for you to stay with us here if you can hopefully get past your feelings. And remember, folks, the toll-free hotline is available for you all 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. 1-800-507-6531, 507-6531. Please jot this down on a post-it pad and or plug it right into the cell phone or your home phone. 1-800-507-6531. You can call anytime. It's automated. You can cancel, delete, get it just right if you'd like. Even remain anonymous if you prefer. 1-800-507-6531. We'd like to field your questions and listen to your comments. All right, opening up the digital mailbag for all of our listeners' email questions. Jason writes in with a question regarding investing and financial advice. He says he's looking for financial education for income purposes, and his goal would be to start using my Alpha Stocks newsletter and understanding just what's going on. He did subscribe for a while, and he has the book, and he'd like to join one of my online courses through North Dakota State University to supplement his income and understand even better. You know, hi, Jason. You know, it sounds like you're on the right pathway to success, and I applaud your initiative. Investing for income purposes for the typical investor, though, I think is fraught with intense hurdles and challenges. I try to advocate building a diverse portfolio, which includes higher than average dividend and coupon interest. Maybe it's somewhat boring, but it is that passive form of income that works so well for most investors. Active trading for income is simply a dangerous path for 90% of folks. I mean, for instance, you've probably heard the fastest way to turn your brokerage account into a balance of $1 million is to start day trading with $1 billion. I give a hat tip to the successful day trader listening, emphasis on the singular and not plural. I don't want to discourage anyone from seeking profits, but would encourage folks to keep pursuing knowledge from this program, the Alpha Stocks newsletter, and every source possible. You know, 90% of well-diversified high-income portfolios outperform active traded accounts. In fact, I'll bet the number is much higher than that. So really, why take the chance? Once you've built up a solid nest egg, if you'd like to speculate, well, even then, caution is advisable. Just remember that precious metals should be the backbone of every portfolio, at least 25% weighting. And in my case, it's over 75%. But then, you know, I'm partial to the sector. Jason, there are some fantastic free educational resources online, such as Dr. Schiller's Yale University lectures, just one of my favorites. In fact, when I taught through North Dakota State University, my online graduate course, and keep in mind that was 4 or 5 years ago before I had actually worked on my PhD. I was really just learning the ropes then. But I can tell you that I loved directing folks to every one of his videos, virtually every one of Dr. Schiller's Yale Econ and Finance lectures are just fantastic. The fact that he was kind enough to give that away to free to society really, I think, speaks volumes of the individual. But he's brilliant and at an Ivy League school, and it's just available to you as though you were sitting in the class. So I'd recommend watching them each video multiple times, starting with maybe just one a night after dinner or after studies. I'm partial to Clemson University and Mercer University, as well as my online school, North Central University. I'm sending over email links to Dr. Schiller's video lectures to you, and I'd like for you to stay in touch, and please keep me updated regarding your progress with these video lectures. If you have any questions, I'll try to field them. You're on the right path. Longtime listener Paula writes that she's a lifetime Alpha Stocks subscriber and faithful listener, would like links to Seth Klarman's digital book. She says she's out of the market. She read Nassim Taleb's book, Anti-Fragile, and has been purchasing hard assets ever since. Purchased two battery generators with solar panels, a portable heater, emergency radio, lantern, and other things as well, now saving in order to purchase dehydrated food. Enjoys reading the newsletter and listening to the show. Well, hi, Paula. You know, absolutely, I have already sent over a digital link to the free copy of Mr. Klarman's book. I mean, you know, it's still must read. And last check, about 15 minutes ago, $1,500 to $2,000 a copy on eBay, because folks just didn't recognize, the publisher didn't recognize what they had at the time. They stopped publishing his book, and he has not allowed it to be published since. So basic supply and demand has certainly pushed prices up. I can see why you are concerned by equities price valuations. Externally high by most metrics, nevertheless, momentum could push prices maybe even higher, similar to our 2000.com bubble. But I do concur that commodities, in particular the precious metals, will remain the red hot sector to accumulate when possible. As for survival, it sounds like you're making solid steps to protect against the tidal wave of big changes and challenges that will be facing the Western world. As the dollar implosion regains momentum, I expect widespread food shortages similar to Katrina, which could result with, you know, chaos that will stem from the loss of potable water, related resources such as electricity. If you're like me and you expect problems to persist for years and not just months, generators, I think, will be of marginal use because, well, it will be challenging to refine gasoline. And even if it's available, the cost will be prohibitive. And then, of course, there's the drive, the commute, and from the gas station and back may be risky amid potential roving gangs, hijackings, random shootings. There are several self-contained solar units available. It sounds like you're already on that path, that can easily be stored, quickly set up on, let's say, a back deck, out of sight, out of mind. The units have built-in batteries and inverters and can provide enough electricity to run, say, a small microwave for a limited time, a single stovetop, an LCD TV, laptop computer, coffee makers, can openers, you know, all the basics you'll need to stay sane and safe during extended outages. In addition, in cold climates, contingencies are essential to survive the brutal cold weather extremes, such as stockpiling firewood, natural gas. And then there's canned food, as well as freeze-dried foods. We never throw out canned foods, even past expiration, because of reports that show that well-cooked expired canned foods are usually edible without any botulism issues. Now, of course, this is not a recommendation, but during extreme emergencies, i.e. starvation, canned foods without even labels, I'd suggest networking with other preppers in your area, and this is going to take some careful evaluation on your part, using preppers as maybe the first keyword term search, and best of luck. Please keep us updated on your progress. Well, next, James says, Chris, I never had a chance to thank you for having Rob Kirby on the show, so thank you. It was one of your best shows and would be great if you could have him back on the show. Well, that's really kind of you to say, James. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I think we all got a lot from Rob Kirby. Whether you agree with his thoughts or not, no one, I think, can debate the fact that this fellow is incredibly knowledgeable. His experience is extensive in the financial markets. Okay, moving on. Bill writes that he wants to thank us for the shows. Well, thanks, Bill. I'm glad you're getting a lot from the show. And moving on. And next up, it's Vidya. He shares my passion for animals and animal rights. Adopting puppies that have broken hind legs need medical treatment. They're also trying to protect calves from slaughter, and has a young friend who started a business for online vegan, and they do lots of rescues. He says that, you know, financial support is so important when it comes to saving animals. Unfortunately, it's just so difficult to come by. And he asks if I am vegetarian, vegan, and what I do to support animal rights. Well, hi, Vidya. Doing my best to live in all vegan clothing, vegan shoes, belts, wallets, furniture, animal friendly. A mostly vegetarian diet. I have cut out all meats, but as a pre-diabetic, glucose levels can sometimes require some non-friendly products. And of course, doing everything I can to focus primarily on nuts, noodles, beans, lentils, grains and potatoes, and other vegetables. You know, regular supporter of a group that rescues dogs from shelters in this area and then ships them to pet-friendly states where their neuter and spay laws keep the population so low that they're in high demand. So they're saving hundreds a year. Also belong to three animal rights groups and a local animal shelter, the Humane Society. We only keep rescue dogs in our family. But it's still not quite enough. I wish that we could do more. Hopefully we will have more. And his next question is about the dollar rupee and things of that nature. And he wants to know what I think about the dollar. Well, you know, the dollar and the rupee situation, unfortunately, is set in stone, and that's zero value. I mean, simply the path obeyed by all paper currencies will be zero. But, you know, they have a tendency, the central banks, of keeping these things rolling along much longer than expected. So I think even Ramanujan would likely concur that if you're willing to be patient 5 to 10 years, your portfolio will be well rewarded for owning silver and gold. And I prefer silver, and continue to add regularly to my humble piggy bank, despite the fact that I think a capitulation may occur before our ultimate nadir. However, I recommend diversification among asset classes, including commodities, currencies, equities, global equities, bonds, real estate, energy. So please keep us updated on your efforts on behalf of birds, mammals, fish. Please let us know if you have any other constructive ideas. Up next, Robert says, thanks for the quick reply. When I tried to subscribe to your Alpha Stocks newsletter, I'd like to receive the $99 yearly deal. Can you please give me more? Yes, you know, I can help you out here, Robert. You will receive within 1 hour or less a refund for, so what happens is if you sign up for our $147 deal, you'll receive roughly a $47 refund almost immediately. So that'll take care of that for you there. And that's considerably more than 10%. Okay. Thanks, Robert. Moving on. Brad says he likes to hear my thoughts and Gerald Slunte's thoughts on nutrition and life. And he points out that he's in his 50s. He was laid off. He says he has no debt. His house and car are paid for, but due to his job loss, his income level is very low, near poverty. He's been living off the cash he saved up with almost no expenses, which I think is clever. He does about 30 hours a week reading on the precious metals and finance and economics, which is fine. He'd like to know my thoughts on the fact that he's, like me, pre-diabetic, what to do, juicing, gardening, things of that nature, and future jobs as well as solar panels. So a whole lot of information, a lot of questions in here. He misses Robert Chapman, Bob Chapman, our dear late friend, like so much of us here. Well, let's see if I can cover most of the things here. I think I've already talked a bit about the solar panels, so we can skip that. I think I've talked a good bit about where to get started with the precious metals and finance, so maybe we can skip that as well. As far as diabetes and juicing, you know, I've been a huge believer of vegetable juicing now for over 15 years. I've been juicing primarily things like cucumbers, carrots, and I love lettuce, spinach, any greens you can think of that are edible are great for juicers. As for diabetes, here's my recommendation, and most people probably won't follow it, but cut out anything sweet. I mean, if it has cane syrup, corn syrup, anything that could even be slightly sugar in the label, my suggestion is to give it to homeless shelters and other folks in need where starvation is the primary concern and not perhaps chronic disease. I also recommend cutting out all fruits, and this is going to be difficult for most people, but I found it essential. Fruit juices in particular have a tendency to be concentrated, and that, of course, increasing exercise levels will become less and less difficult as you follow this advice because your energy level will skyrocket. And then, of course, if your kidney health is strong, you'll want to add in alpha-lipoic acid. Of course, talking to a physician first about all these ideas. I am not a physician, just a PhD candidate. As well as all of the essential nutrients like omega-3, vitamin D. This nation has an epidemic of vitamin D deficiency. And a little bit of magnesium, again, if your kidneys are strong. So these are just a few ideas to get you started. And please, by all means, check out Dr. Mark Hyman's videos on every subject, but in particular, diabetes and diabesity. I think it'll simply change your life. I know it has been a miracle and a blessing to my family. So I hope this all helps out. I'd like for you to keep in touch with me, and maybe we can do some networking to perhaps get you on a solid job path. All right, next up, Chef Snow writes in and says he's a big fan of the show, and he liked the Gerald Slunte discussion where we talked about avoiding sugary tomato sauces. He says he wants everyone to know that he's created and manufactures his own line of 3 pasta sauces, Thoughtful Harvest. There's a free plug for you. He says most store-bought sauces contain foreign ingredients, contain bad ingredients, cheap commodities and oils. They're not organic or certified, and there's a lot of GMOs, sugars, and corns. And, you know, I can attest to this shift. I have eliminated it all. Tomato sauce was my biggest concern. You know, I was consuming just huge amounts of Italian/Sicilian family members, and so I was reared with a lot of sauces, tomato sauces, pizzas, linguinis, lasagnas. We were just heavy on the tomato sauce. So you're right, way too much sugar. And actually, tomatoes, I make my own homegrown and organic tomatoes. You know, it's very easy to make your own tomato sauces. All you do is boil a large pot of water, throw the tomatoes in for just a few minutes, and then drop them in a bowl of cold water, and that blanches and removes the skins. They just fall right off. And then, of course, you can just blend them up or use a hand mixer, boil that down, and you'll find that you have fantastic sauces which really don't seem to irritate pre-diabetes. So folks, let me encourage you to check out Chef Snow's Thoughtful Harvest. There you go. Look for Thoughtful Harvest. You know, 100% certified, single estate, extra virgin olive oil. Sounds great to me. California grown plum tomatoes. He's got a video. You can check it out at harvesteating.com. He has a blog as well. And Daniel, longtime listener and friend, Daniel says he hopes things are well, and he'd like to find a reputable precious metals seller that doesn't mark up Morgan dollars. He's noticed several have big time markups. He's just not happy with them. I have just the place for you. It's Gold Eagle, and my suggestion is ask for Clint Stelfox. He's been just fantastic to us, and I highly recommend them. You might even mention that Chris sent you there, and no, I don't get any kickbacks or special favoritism or anything for it. It just might help you in your purchases. They have, I think, the best service and the best prices, and take it from a guy who's been in the market for decades. That's my suggestion, Gold Eagle. You might want to bookmark the site. Great to hear from you all. And don't forget, we'd like to hear your questions and comments. And you know, the phone calls get top priority. We need to hear from some of our regulars out there. And you know who you are. Get on the horn and give us a call. Plus, there's many others we'd like to hear from. Just pick up the phone, give us a call. And you know that number by now, but why not say it again? 1-800-507-6531. What was that you say? 1-800-507-6531. We'd like for you to stay with us right here at GoldSeek.com Radio. More news and guest interviews coming right up at GoldSeek. Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.